Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome again to Really with Tom and Dave. I'm Dave, Dave Foley, to be specific, because there used to be a lot of Daves, fewer now. And on the other side there, you'll see Tom Wheeler.
What happened to all the Daves?
Well, they're just, people stopped naming their kids Dave. It's just, you know.
Oh, we're going to.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know if there was a Dave event.
No, they're, it's basically, I think we're becoming endangered. Due to sort of generations of the name just being really boring.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're one of the few survivors.
Yes.
Keeping the Dave flame going.
Yeah. I don't think there are any Daves that don't have gray hair in the world at this point.
Well, let me think.
Pretty sure.
That's true. I have an Uncle Dave and he's 80.
Yeah.
Or plus. So
I'm definitely a junior member of the Dave Corps.
You're doing good as far you're in the youthful yeah. Dave department.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, although David Grush, you know, that's a good one.
True. Yeah.
He's bringing up the line in the UAP.
He's relatively young. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Listen.
And he's mostly bald, right? So it's hard to tell if he's turning gray.
It's hard to tell. He's got like the little Air Force thing going on. But we digress, which
yes,
is part of the fun. For sure. But how are you?
I'm well. I'm just realizing I've got my Flick actually. I looks like an alien because of the context.
That is
a
Flick.
A little lounging Flick back there.
Wonderful Dave Foley highlight. But I was Flick.
I just noticed it over my shoulder. I'm well. I'm doing well. It's becoming autumnal. Hence the plaid flannel.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Here in New York City. I don't know if you've heard of the place.
Yeah. I heard it was rainy and it was making you sleepy.
It's been rainy for days. Yes. I think that's what was making me sleepy.
Okay.
And not the old dengue fever coming back from my colonial days.
Does it live for a while? I think
I've never had dengue fever. I've never, but I just love it as a British colonial reference.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little dengue. Have you survived it?
Oh, yeah.
We should do like a rare diseases. I love a survival story. I love a good, horrible survival story. I will, any vacation reading, the more horrendous the conditions on the people on any sort of survival story, it might make me feel more comfortable on vacation. Like it makes my more relaxing to read about people in the most uncomfortable situations ever. But it makes my family mad because I will tell them like details that are they hate, you know.
Yeah, I hate all that too because I immediately assume that I will get anything that someone describes to me.
Well, hopefully you don't end up like lost in the, you know, like 17th century Sahara desert or anything like that on a shipwreck.
Anything can happen. I have no sense of direction. That could happen to me just if I'm trying to get over to Dyckman Street here, and
we get a call.
Yeah,
we're trying to do Life 360 on you.
Yeah.
And we find you in the desert in some dune.
Yes, walking, sun blind.
Yeah.
I've got sun blindness, right. You know.
Oh, they did terrible.
I can't see a thing.
Drink camel pee. They had to do horrible, horrible things. But
it's really, if you never tried camel pee, it's really quite delicious.
I don't know. I'm not going to. I just read about it. I have no interest in going. That's my neurotic stuff kicking in. Not going to be experienced. Just read about. But listen. This is fun, but we have a wonderful guest today.
Yes, we do have a guest. We do.
Fabulous guest and a dear friend of the Reilly family.
Mm-hmm.
Going back a couple years. Today we have, and now is it the parlance? Are you an experiencer if you have just seen?
I think.
Or do you
I
have to
they,
be?
I think experience.
Is that an abduction
thing? I don't think it has to be an abduction. I think any kind of contact.
Okay.
In experience, I think any kind of an encounter, I think, is considered an experiencer now.
I love talking with experts, and that's all super cool and going over what's been going on in government. But it's I find the conversations where someone who's had, you know, they've seen it with their own eyes or experienced something that is super interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Today we have Robin Ruzan, who, as well as being an experiencer, is also an actor, writer, producer, has appeared in multiple roles on film and television, including being John Malkovich, which is fantastic, Sex and the City, Curb Your Enthusiasm, and Transparent, as an executive producer and creator of The Room Live, which was all original content online television network and production company. She produced over 250 episodes of traditional length television plus talk shows with Oprah.com and also the celebrity game show Celebrity Liar with Jason Alexander, and was most recently a writer and consulting producer on FX's Better Things, starring Pamela Adlon, and like I said, a very good friend of ours here today. Robin, where are you?
Hello, Robin.
Hello.
Robin, there she is.
We have another guest. I'm so sorry. As you know, my generator is on because my power went off and now my dog is afraid of the sound of the generator. We're having, you know, we're having a moment right
but
now.
But you were thinking this could be a byproduct of the story you're going to tell, or we're going with that.
Yes,
we're going.
I think the aliens are freaked out intervening. That I'm going to discuss it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
who's your friend on your lap here? Who let's introduce formally.
This is B. Ruzanski. She kept her original name.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Modern lady.
Very cute.
She went back to Ellis Island and got the ski back from Ruzan.
Yeah. So.
The original signature found out.
I know.
She's looking for so stoic today.
It's the generator.
You know, she's handling the generator well, for sure.
Now, I should say, Rob, you and I have been friends, I think, almost like 37 years, I think, at this point.
I mean, I haven't counted.
I think it's about that.
Really? Did you do the math?
I forget.
That's annoying that we're old enough to have known people that long.
Yes.
You know?
I know.
And we met as adults also.
Yes, I know.
There were children.
Circle room or something?
Children born the year we met are now middle-aged.
Oh my God. It's awful.
It's a good thing. It's a beautiful thing.
But it's good. It's good to know you this long, Dave. Yeah. That part is very nice. Yeah.
But here's the. But I bring up how the lengthiness of our friendship.
Yes.
In part because I've known you all these years, and it wasn't until I think I had posted about the Nat Geo show UFOs. Investigating the unexplained, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And then you messaged me and told me, because there was the episode about the incident we're going to talk about, and you told me that you had that, you know, the experience that we're going to discuss. But all those years, it had never come up.
No,
not once.
Actually, what happened was we were at some party or gathering and you were talking about UFOs and I just told you that I had seen one and I told you about it.
Yes.
And you sent me that clip.
Right. That's right.
So it's backwards. You sent me that clip.
Most of my memories are.
I'm glad you're here clarify.
It's a miracle. I remember your name because it's an old timey name now. As I've learned. I don't think there's a lot of Robins either. So I'm right there with you.
Apparently Dave's are dropping like flies, I'm told. Yeah. This is terrifying.
But yeah, it was very impactful to get that from you. I think I told you that, or maybe I didn't tell you, but you sent me that clip and I watched it. And, you know, my sighting was so long ago, and it's kind of like, I don't know, like I don't tell a lot of people. I don't really think about it a lot. It's like, you know, like a dark little secret that happened to me. And when you sent that to me and I watched it, I cried.
Oh, wow.
It made me cry.
Well,
yeah.
Well, there's a lot of trauma involved with the stigma connected to having seen UFOs or had an encounter with UFOs. And yeah, people do put it away. And I guess we should just say that Robin was part of one of the most famous UFO events, or a lengthy events that went on for a long period of time, which was it's called the Hudson Valley Flap. They call them flaps in the UFO world.
Why a flap is a sighting? Is
that a bunch of sightings together, like a bunch of
is that like a parliament of owls or something like
that?
That's a flap.
Yeah, I'm not sure who came up with flap, but I know that's the UAP term.
Terrible.
Yeah,
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like, I don't know.
Something more Star Wars like.
Yeah. Yeah. You could use it as, you could use the term wave as a synonym for flap.
Yeah.
But you were a part of the the famous Hudson Valley incident. Or incidents. And I guess, should we run that clip before we go on?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I might cry again.
All right.
The Hudson Valley sightings are really bizarre, but unlike Rendlesham, this thing is much bigger. I mean, we're talking here, some of the witnesses will talk about these things being the size of football fields, but hovering or moving very slowly in the sky and then accelerating away to the horizon at an incredible rate.
Thousands of witnesses describe seeing massive objects in the sky, outlined by colorful lights. But I Skyped with one of the few who managed to film what she saw.
We were actually driving down Route 84, going eastbound, when we saw this thing in the sky. So when we got home, we thought we lost it, and my husband went to let the dog out, and he called me, and he said, "You gotta see this, come out here, it's back." So when we saw this object in the sky, the first thing we did is we ran in and grabbed the video camera and just started taking images of it. It was a ring of lights, but when this round object flew over, we could not see through it. The lights were actually, you could see by a naked eye, you can't see it in the video, but the lights are actually turning. They were turning to the left, and they started changing colors as they turned.
While many accounts described V-shaped or boomerang-shaped objects, Lori says she saw it from a different perspective.
The way people are describing it is based on where they were standing. Some people were standing directly underneath it. So could it have been a V-type shape formation or a boomerang shape? It's possible, yes.
Crazy.
Even listening to that, it just is so, it's such a weird feeling because it's so visceral for me. And again, it's like this quiet thing that I just kept inside. And to hear somebody else describe it almost exactly how I experienced it is very emotional. It's very strange.
Yeah. Well, tell us about that night. Yeah.
Yeah. Set the stage for us, because I always feel like talking with any witness is super interesting, but someone that, you know, we know and through the year, like it's very meaningful. Like we've tried to have people on that we kind of know and who have gone through stuff, just because there's also that level of just kind of trust and understanding. I feel like there's just an immediate new level you can get to with this kind of thing. But yeah, just try to walk us through where you were and what happened.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've just recently started listening to, because of another thing that happened to a friend of mine, of NDAs, not NDAs. That's, what is it? Near-death experience. NDE. NDEs. And, they say that when they talk about it, it's as vivid as if it's happening right now. And it's very similar with this memory. You know, it's very, it's very vivid and it's very clear. And it's not like a faded dream. It's like a very clear thing. So what happened was, it was 1982. And I was living, I was with my family in Briarcliff Manor, New York, which is in the Hudson Valley. You know, it's in Westchester, New York, right near the Hudson River. And it was sort of, I would say it was probably about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe a little bit later. And my dad, we lived up on a little bit of a hill, and my dad was sitting looking over, you know, at the living room, looking over the whole neighborhood. You know, you could see kind of far out because we were a little raised. And he said, "Come here, I want to show you something." So I was like, "What?" You know, like that, like, rah-rah. I was all huffing and puffing. And he said, look at, what is that? It was really far away at this point. And I said, "Oh, it's an airplane." He said, no, watch it, right? And I'm like, "Dad, it's an airplane, it's an air." And I went, "Oh, wait, what is that?" Because all of a sudden,
what's the sky like? Like, is it day? Is it sunset?
It was later afternoon, so it was getting a little dusky, okay. But it was still light out. Okay. But it wasn't bright sun.
Got it.
It was, you know, and I looked, and it changed color and it changed shape. And so I went, "Oh, wait, what is that?" You know, like, so I sat down with him and we're like, you know, glued to the window, and we're just watching this thing, and it's way out in the distance, and it starts moving in closer. And now, you know, as it's moving in closer, it's getting more dusky and dark, you know? And it's like nothing you've ever seen ever in the entire world. It's not a balloon. It's not, you know, it's not a blimp. It's not anything you've seen, you know. And it's moving really quickly. Not really quickly. It's moving slowly at this point. And you can see it keeps changing like color and shape. And from my perspective, as I was watching it, it seemed, it didn't seem like a craft. It didn't seem like it had like structure to it. It felt more like an orb, kind of light orb, but it wasn't without boundaries, you know? So it wasn't just like a flickering thing. It was like a light orb, and it kind of like changed color and shape.
How high up in the sky would you, I mean, is it plane height? Is it lower than plane, helicopter height? I mean,
it's sort of helicoptery height. But what started to happen is it started to move way closer to my neighborhood. And as it got closer, this is what makes me know, like, all right, I wasn't crazy. And I, you know, like it wasn't like my brain, like, oh, I didn't have a brain tumor or something. Yeah. Like, because everybody in the neighborhood got out.
Wow.
They got out on the street. So my entire neighborhood was there. So it wasn't just like me and my dad are having this weird experience. Everybody came out to look at it. Actually, at one point, my mom came back from the supermarket, and you know, my mom, she ran. She's like, "I don't want to see it." She ran inside. She was just so freaked out. She's like, "I don't want to know it." So she ran in.
Wow.
And
which is what she does when she sees me. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. So we stood out in the neighborhood for a while, and then it felt like it was coming over our neighborhood in particular. And just like the woman said, it was a couple of football fields, like, big. It was gigantic. It was the entire sky. And
wow.
It was so big, and it was hovering right over us. And my next door neighbor was a pilot, and he said, "We don't know how to do this," because it wasn't making any noise, and there was no propulsion. There was no, you know, there was no wind moving or anything. And
what shape is it right now? Because it was a light. What is, if it's over you, you're seeing what are you seeing?
Yeah, I'm seeing kind of like an oblongy kind of, it's a little amorphous. It's a little, you know, it's more like an oblong orb. Like I couldn't see windows or wheels, like nothing like that. But it was definitely like, I mean, I always say this, it was an unidentified flying object. It wasn't like a weird comet or anything like that. It was like it was something. It was
Is
something.
the skin of it like, is it like still light? Does it feel like one light, or does it feel like many lights blurring a shape under it?
No,
Because
it felt like one light. It felt from it looked different from different angles as it was, you know, moving, but when it came overhead, it felt like one light. And it came so sort of straight over our head at one point that I got very scared and I ran inside because I don't know if I imagined it or I felt it, but I just felt like I felt this is all right. I'm going to tell you, I've never
Tell
even
them,
said this out loud because I don't really talk about this a lot, but I felt like it saw me see it.
yeah.
Whatever that
Yeah.
even means, but I
Well,
felt like,
I know what that
you know what
means.
I'm
I
saying?
know what that
Oh, you
means.
do? Is this a thing? Because I don't really investigate this stuff. Is that a thing?
It was
Or
for
you
it
know
was
what
for
I'm
what I
saying?
it is what I what I
Yeah.
experienced. I had that feeling too.
So when I felt like it saw me see it, I ran inside and I got really scared at that point. So then I was watching it again from the window, a different window now. I moved into my bedroom. And I was watching it from my window. My dad was still outside. My brother was
Do you think this
outside.
is a it must be like a fucking alien invasion at this point? I mean, how long has this been going on now, and
Well,
how long would you
yeah,
say from this first sighting to this moment in your bedroom is
like 2 hours. Like
2 hours?
this whole thing
Holy
is 2 hours.
shit.
And so I'm
That's
sort of
crazy.
crouched in my bedroom because I thought it knew I saw it somehow. And so I was crouched in my bedroom, but still looking out the window. And all of a sudden, just like the woman just said, all of a sudden, it just shot off. It shot off so fast and it was gone. It flew out like there's like a little foresty area, you know, to the left of us. And it just shot out and it was gone. It was just completely gone. So I immediately called the police department. I don't know why, but I called the police department and he answered. He goes, I know, we know about it. We know about it. Like he didn't even ask me what was going on. And then the next day, so this was Halloween Eve when this
Oh,
happened.
wow.
Wow.
Good
Yeah.
timing.
And so the next day in the local paper, they said that people saw this thing in the air, but it was just a prank. It was two small private, you know, small little planes that strung lights on them to pretend it was a UFO, which it like just wasn't. I mean, that's exactly what it wasn't, you know, and anybody who saw that knew that. And I was like, why are they saying that? And then the other feeling that I had is like I would wake up every morning and I would check my body. I would check my body to see if there was any marks or any things because again, I had like this weird feeling like they saw me see it, whatever it was, and that they were gonna like single me out. I don't know what my brain was doing as such a young person, but for like a year, I checked my body every day.
Now, did you have any knowledge of like of the sort of things that go along with abduction phenomena at that point that you'd be
Just
checking
like,
for, or?
you know, that silly, like silly stuff that you would see on, like, you know, I don't know, like, you know, Star Trek or something. I don't know, like whatever sort of like TV junk I had in my head. You know, what is it, Lost in Space? Like, you know, I had 60s television Alien in my head. That's what I had in my head.
But you didn't experience any kind of sense of like lost, missing time or anything after seeing
No,
it.
I didn't, but I kept checking for it. Like I for like about a year, I was very sort of like on high alert about it. You know, it was very like you know because you saw, like when you see something, like you know you saw something.
something, yeah, very that, unusual. And yeah,
you know, you saw something that like didn't well come from here.
Now, how did the community and your family, how did you all process this experience?
Well, you know, like how we process, you know, any trauma in our lives, we pretended it didn't. We talked about it for a minute and we pretended it didn't happen, you know?
Yeah.
But like every once in a while, you know, my dad has passed away and my brother's passed away. But a few times with my dad in the last few years, you know, before he passed away, like we talked about it a couple of times. Like, you know, we brought it up. And again, it's sort of like this, I mean, it's so different now lately because people are acknowledging that this is like a thing. But when I had my sighting, it was so like embarrassing and shameful and, you know, crazy. And so you just have a lot of shame around it, which is why I definitely think I cried when I saw, you know, that footage, because, you know, it's like, oh, it really did happen. It wasn't like a thing. And my mom and I have talked about it. I told her I was doing this and I said I was going to talk about the UFO sighting. And she said, oh, really? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like she, you know, she acknowledges she didn't want to see it, though. She ran in. She was freaked out.
Yeah. So she did she see something? She saw enough of it to be aware that it was going on, though, I guess.
Oh, yeah. She knows. No, she knows. Yeah. She was part of it. She was definitely there. And like, you know, over the years, things would happen and I would hear about, like, I read Communion at some point because I had told somebody very, you know, you have to, like, now I'm fine to talk about it. But through the years, you would only want to tell people that you felt kind of safe with, who wouldn't judge you.
Sure.
And so I told a few people here and there, and somebody recommended that I read Communion. And I would say, like, every few years, you know, I would get curious and Google it, and you know, because I didn't know that my sighting, I thought my sighting was like obviously a big deal in my neighborhood, but I didn't know that it was like a thing.
But your neighbors, you wouldn't discuss it with your neighbors after that?
Like, no. People,
it would be, I mean, you know. There were no town meetings, no.
No, I mean, after the initial thing, maybe we talked about it for a little bit, and then we, you know, then we pretended nothing ever happened. Yeah.
Well,
and
there was nothing. How old were you when this happened?
I think I was 17 or 18.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, a person.
Yeah.
I was definitely a person by then.
It also really shows the power of that disinformation stuff, right? Because the moment they put in the paper of like, no, that's not what you saw, even though you know in your heart and clearly like the emotion of it has set there in your body all this time, like it was clearly something that impacted you. The fact that they say, nope, you didn't, it just creates a sort of cycle of shame and don't bring it up and don't talk about it, which is kind of what it's designed to do. When it's so clearly like you can tell the difference, particularly in that sort of light and daylight, and see, you know, that's a wild sighting. I mean, we've been hearing some craziness, but it is amazing to be, you know, you were part of, one of the biggest mass sightings in the country's history.
And again, I didn't know that until just like 10 years ago. I didn't know that what I thought what I saw was very, you know, particular to my neighborhood and everything. I didn't know it was like a series of sightings over years, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a real hotbed for quite, what were you saying? It was more
it's
than
3 years.
Years.
Like 82. Three. Well, you saw it in 82, right?
82. Yeah, I think it was 82.
And they say they went all the way to like 86. I think there was that, you know, and you know, hundreds and hundreds of people have been.
Hundreds of people, and like police officers and town officials and doctors and pilots and, you know, a lot of really credible, you know, observers. And
it's so funny because I was telling my trainer that I was going to do this podcast. She wanted to make an appointment with me. I said, I can't, I'm doing a podcast. She said, about what? I said, about my UFO sighting. And she turned around and gave me like crazy eyes.
Well,
and I said,
yeah. Oh no, that stigma, the stigma is still like it's certainly
it's still there.
The last few years it's been lessened to a great extent, but still, yeah, it's still very strong. And you know, it doesn't take long now
because I've gotten a little like even doing the podcast, right? Because I'm, you know, we all do our different things in the course of the day. And this is like a chance to have amazing conversations with interesting people about that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to find out more about this.
Right.
And it is interesting, but it's always people that haven't the foggiest fucking idea of like what's going on with this stuff right now. And like, you don't have to like dig into conspiracy stuff. You just have to, let's look into what's happening in the government in terms of the laws that they're passing about this thing that there's clearly, it's not a question of is any of this happening or all these people have mass hysteria. It's so clearly happened. It's just processing what it might be.
Yeah.
I think the fact that no one has very good answers of what exactly that was that keeps them from kind of being more open about it. And I just think it, but I'm curious well, two things. I am wondering what your experience was reading Communion, because that happened in the Hudson Valley.
That started opening me up to understanding that what I had seen was part of a bigger thing that I didn't know about. And again, like every time anytime I've read stuff, it soothes me because it's a very unusual thing to happen to a person, you know, it's like a very unusual thing. But when I saw the footage, Dave, that you sent me, that made me cry because I hadn't seen like people talking about it. I hadn't seen like images of it that are so spot on. It really made me realize that I've been, you know, sitting on something for so long that's carried all the shame around it. But the thing that's always kept me like in good stead was that everybody saw it. Like, so it wasn't like this private little weird thing that happened to me. Like the whole neighborhood saw it. I could call a dozen people from my childhood right now and they would say, yeah, I remember that day. I remember that, you know?
I was just going to say, that's amazing to me that is with the power of the stigma the fear of ridicule, that even though your family experienced it, you had your neighbors experienced it, that you would all still be made to feel this way. It's a remarkable sociological.
But I do think it changed how I look at things because I know what I saw. And then the next day to have that reported in the paper was like, it made me look at things differently from now on, you know, in terms of like the news and what they're telling us and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it cracked my brain open a little bit to what's going on? Why did they say that? That's a weird thing.
I can't trust those people. They're telling the truth about this.
You know,
lying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it definitely cracked my brain open a little bit.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think there's so much damage has been done by this kind of the debunking and the ridicule to people for decades and decades. Just the emotional damage done to people for having to feel like that something this remarkable is something you can't discuss, you can't acknowledge, and that if you do, people will look at you funny and treat you differently.
Yeah. Imagine there was like a few, I mean, at least in my neighborhood, dozens of people. And like to think of it now, like, you know, this like orb craft the size of a few football fields hovered over our houses for a few hours and then took off into the night like in a second, and we didn't talk about that.
No, yeah, in a healthier environment, that would be all you would ever talk about ever again.
Get to the bottom of that.
Ever again.
Yeah.
You know, ever again.
It'd be like, hey, good morning. Remember that we saw the UFO?
I know. I know. And it, you know, to think of it now, again, like coming out of it now, it feels like, you know, being able to talk about it, it's like, you know, to be able to, over the years, to just say something to my mother or my father, And it's not like, what UFO? It's like, yeah, that was.
Yeah. Well, it's not like if you'd seen a tornado, you'd yeah. talk about it. And everyone in your neighborhood would talk, hey, remember that tornado?
Yeah.
Oh, that was
yeah.
quite. Remember that year the tornado came through? And
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's, and you'd just, everyone would talk about the details of what a tornado looked like up close. And,
right.
you know, and it's,
right.
and it's, and, you know, and this is a much more extraordinary thing than a tornado.
It really is. And also, like, you know, my shame about it, what, like, I know that I do this, like, apologetic thing when I have spoken about it, where I'll say, you know, I don't think it was like a UFO. It's like an unidentified flying object. But I don't know, maybe it came from Russia or something.
Yeah.
It didn't come from Russia.
Well, see,
I try to minimize it.
That's very typical. I was actually just reading the J. Allen Hynek's book, and he talks about that, you know, because the misperception about people who witness UFOs is that it's some sort of wish fulfillment, and yeah. this is, they see something and they want,
really?
And they want it to be a UFO. And in his book, he says it's exactly the opposite. People that see UFOs consistently try to find any other explanation for what they saw first. They go through everything and they struggle to find something else that it could be. And then they're left finally with, now it wasn't that. It was a
right.
UFO. And
see, that's what's funny too, is to, like, and just in talking to you, to understand how typical I am of somebody who has seen one, you know, that we all sort of go through a process, I guess, of trying to make sense of it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting that we would all have similar features.
Yeah, everyone resists becoming that person who's just seen a UFO.
I know. That's so true. I've spent so much time, but in recent years, you know, they've rebranded UFO. What do they call them?
A UAP. Yeah.
UAP now. So they've rebranded them. And now it seems to be, you know, more acceptable to talk about it. And I definitely feel less of, like, you know, fear or shame to talk about it, for sure. I definitely feel better about it, because I feel like, you know, if Obama goes on and he says, yeah, we've been tracking this stuff and it's real, then I go, oh, see?
Yeah, right.
See?
Yeah. And he's
really did.
And we had, and Jimmy Carter's, you know, had a UFO experience, and Ronald Reagan had a UFO experience. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. See, like, you're into UFOs. I just saw one, you know? So it's like, I haven't really, you know, like, again, I, like, every few years I'll Google a little bit and, you know, and then I'll not.
I'm interested in the fact that sometimes, like, people see something like this, but the response is interesting. Like, Dave, your response was interesting. Robin, your response was interesting, because it's not like a big spiritual experience, right? It's more of
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The truest sense of alien, or there's a certain, I guess I'm curious about exploring a little bit more of that emotional reaction. This thing is hovering over you and you feel like you were seen. Can you dig into that a little bit more? Like, what did you have any perception of what might be seeing you, or how it was seeing you, or what it was seeing? Was it I guess I'm always curious about these strength, like the reaction to these things is always so interesting to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know if it was from my 60s TV sort of, you know, catalog that was in my brain or an actual feeling, but it's correct what you're saying is like when you're faced with something that doesn't make any sense at all, like I can't stress to you enough how like this thing was hovering in the sky right above us. That was curious to me too, because it seemed to, I don't know, again, it could be my perception, my imagination, but it seemed to like hover over, like it landed, it hovered over our neighborhood. But again, it was several neighborhoods because it was so big. And also it didn't seem like it lit up the sky too. So it wasn't like we couldn't look at it. It wasn't blinding or anything. We could see it. It was right there. And I don't know, like again, it's hard to,
I get it.
Words, but it felt sentient in some way. It didn't feel like a meteorological event.
Right.
It felt sentient. It felt like it was alive, or something in it was alive, or it felt alive in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, and I wasn't afraid of it until I felt like it, like saw me.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think, I mean, that's,
that would frighten me too.
There's a big part of like a UFO experience is often, it is a feeling of, that is interacting with your consciousness.
Really? See, this is amazing to me because I don't investigate this stuff. So that's
Dave,
amazing.
You guys talked about your, I mean, have you shared your, because Dave had an interest, like you kind of felt a little bit sort of cut off, right?
Well, I felt like it was controlling the level of emotion that we brought to it. Like it was tamping down all of our emotions so that we had no excitement at all. It was like just keeping us calm and paying attention without any heightened emotion throughout the whole experience, which is weird because, you know, I thought if I ever saw a UFO, I'd be like one of those people on the YouTube videos shouting, "What the fuck? Oh, fuck, man, fuck." Right. You know, every third word would be fuck. And I'd be astonished. And I was there with Jeremy Corbell, who is a UFO investigator, documentary filmmaker, journalist. Who's dedicated his life to this. And he was the same way, like his first UFO sighting. But it was tamping down our responses in a way. And it felt like it was interacting with us.
Okay. So I didn't feel that.
Yeah.
But
no, it's
in.
Yeah.
No, but you saying that I know exactly what you're talking about. So I didn't feel that, but I understand like there's something in it that makes something in my experience that makes me go, I know exactly what you're saying. I didn't feel like I was tamped down, but I did feel that I was relating to it, communicating with it in some way, like, I did.
No, and I think it seems like the stories I've heard, there's innumerable ways that it can interact with people and affect them. You know, and obviously each experience is unique to each person who has the experience.
Right.
Were you spiritual at all prior to this? Did it change how you, I mean, what was your level of, I think they call it like ontological shock, right? When you're sort of faced with, I mentioned my friend Gene, who was a guest on this show, also a friend of mine for 30 years, who had a riveting and terrifying abduction experience, which I had heard about when I was 19.
Oh, wow.
When I heard about it, I was 19 for the first time. And she, of course, shared it with very few people. Luckily her mother was a corroborating witness. So at least she had that. Otherwise she definitely would have assumed she had gone crazy and never spoken of it again, probably, but was she felt, and I'm hearing post having talked with us, she feels better in terms of having realized that other people experience this. But I'm curious about the sort of ontological shock of it. That was mine. Hearing Jean's story was mine, of like having to go, I didn't even have to experience. I just, hearing her story was like, I now have to decide what this world is like. Like, is my friend, do I think my friend's crazy and all my instincts about her are that I don't know her at all and she would make up this, or do I, my whole worldview is different now. I mean, what was your feeling before and after, or did it have to go into its little place?
I actually, before, like nothing. I had nothing before. I had no spirituality. I had no religion. I had nothing. And my brother passed away in 1990. And when he died, that started my kind of spiritual journey, because my big thing was, where did he go? I was lucky enough, in the Jewish religion, you don't look at the body, you know, it's a covered casket. And you also like hire somebody to pray with the body overnight before the funeral. And so I went to the funeral home the night before, and the little man was praying over my brother's casket. And I went in to say goodbye because I was going home. I went in with my cousin Peter, and the little old man, the little Jewish man who's like reading little Jewish prayers to my dead brother, said, "Do you want to see the body?" and I froze, and my cousin Peter said, "Yes." And I looked at Peter like he knows something I don't know, so I'm going to go with it. And the little guy opened up the casket, and it was the best thing that could have happened to me. Like, I'm so grateful. I always say to people now, please, if you can, see the body, because it was so clear that who my brother was not this
right
vessel. You know, it was helpful spiritually to sort of make peace with it. But I really think that once I started my journey, the UFO piece became part of it. You know, it became sort of like, it became in the pile of, there's so much we don't know, and there's so much mystery, and I always wondered if again, I'm saying things out loud that I've only kept in my head, but I always wondered if my sighting was sort of like a precursor to opening up my mind to certain ideas that maybe I wouldn't have known before or thought about before, or maybe in some way I don't know. Like, did they zap me with some, you know, juice or something? I don't know. Like, did something happen to me that, like, did they know my brother was going to die? And did they sort of like, was this some way to prepare me? I don't know. Like, I don't know. It was, the whole thing is so incredibly mysterious. So I think that it has added to the pot of mysteries about our existence, what we're doing here, where we go after, where did we come from, you know, like what is this crazy thing that we're doing here? What's this crazy thing we're doing here? You know, my godson, I'm very close to my godson, and he'll call me and he'll be like, you know, work, you know, they gave me a report and the bonus that they're giving, you know, he's like complaining. And I'm like, dude, you're on like a big rock floating in space. Who gives a shit? Who cares, you know? Like, so it's definitely given my life this like perspective that I don't think I would have had I not seen it.
Yeah.
You know,
I think, and it tends to be my experience so far, it's like people that engage with thinking about the phenomena, it's usually doesn't take long before you start asking bigger questions about things like consciousness and right. What, you know, and how does it relate to death, and you know, because right. Like I know for me, because I said I'm like, since early childhood I've been an atheist and a staunch believer in, you know, the scientific method and, you know, material reductionist, and you know that everything could be explained through you know, the physics of matter and energy. Everything will fit into these patterns if we just look hard enough. And,
right.
But sort of getting into this topic is maybe doubt that, you know, I don't know if I've totally rejected it, but it's definitely made me doubt it. Like I've always rejected any notions of spirituality and any notions of any kind of a soul or
so how do you make sense of your UFO experience or any UFO experience?
Well, I don't really, so far I can't really make much sense of it. Right. But I know that I'm no longer confident that reality is as sort of simple as I thought it was.
Right.
You know, and right. and that we are, and I'm not confident that we're capable of figuring everything out. Or at least not through the scientific method isn't the tool that'll get us there.
Right.
But that there, yeah, and you know, and that maybe, you know, does not necessarily that there's a soul or anything, but maybe there is some kind of underlying reality to consciousness that goes outside of this, you know, sort of body we live in, you right. know, and
right.
and I think a lot of people who get involved with this start to think about those things and become curious about those yeah. things. So it's
Have you had any mystical experiences since then?
No, not really. I've had like just sort of odd coincidences that seem, you know, that are hard to quite rationalize. But
I'm sorry, Dave, go ahead.
Oh, no, that was it. I ran out.
I mean, I think and I'm curious, well, let me ask this, Robin, what do you have, what does your gut tell you was in that ship? I mean, do you have any kind of just, whether it's the 1960s version of what might've been in there? I mean, what do you think was in there?
I don't know that anything was necessarily in there. Hmm. It might've been it.
That's
it might've been it. You know, I don't know, but I can say that it felt sentient to me. It felt like it had some intent and it had some intelligence about it. And it had some, you know, purpose. Like it just didn't, it was alive. Somehow it was sentient. It had intention and purpose. It felt like when it was hovering, it was doing something. I don't know what, but it felt like it was important that it stayed where it was for a while. And then it just shot away and it was gone. And it felt like, I mean, it's like, I'm just trying to see, like, what do I have here? All right, I have ketchup, right? So it's like you're looking at ketchup above your head, right? And you're like, one thing I know is that ketchup could not take off so fast in an instant. You know, it just is not possible looking at what I'm looking at that I could see it sort of kind of floating away a little bit. But this, like, it's not possible. This is just,
yeah,
and it's like gone.
Yeah.
You know, so it felt like something was, you know, driving it, moving it, something.
Yeah. I think the sentience thing is a really cool way. And I think that does line up with a lot of other sightings and also a kind of clinical quality to the sense of observation, maybe not a lot of warmth. I mean, if anything, my thoughts on it, it feels like we might be at the, I suppose this could have been going on for a very long time in our history as humanity, but our perception of what's going on is what happens when two species start to interact and one is really way, way, way more,
right.
way, way more advanced to the point that I'm starting to, right. in all the kind of reading and research and people we're talking to and it doesn't line up with our traditional idea where they come and they do a sort of, you know, like, hey, I've learned your language. I want to say hi. And this is what our planet's like. And this is like, that's sort of how we think they would behave. But I think what we're seeing is maybe the more realistic and true way it would behave, which is we don't have the slightest fucking idea how they think, what perception would be. Are they even a they? Like, you know, what sort of technology is, maybe we're just dealing with a technology and the actual they are very far away. But it has left me with this feeling that I thought would be a little more reassuring, but it's more like, oh, I think maybe the universe is teeming with life, but we might really be on the low end of the kind of technological arc. So we might be kind of, and our ability to sort of perceive what's around us, because one of the things that does seem to be kind of gaining traction is that these things aren't from sort of outer space, but sort of some kind of just a space we can't quite perceive that could be very sort of close up to us or more kind of around or sharing this planet with us. Who knows? But yeah, it's kind of for me wrapping my head around of like, okay, this is kind of what it would be like to be sort of observed as a something that doesn't even understand what, you know, or couldn't, we can't even see what it is unless they want to be seen. I don't know. It's a weird laboratory, perhaps, that I think is kind of, you know, super interesting, makes the universe very interesting. And we've always known, like, of course, with bajillions of planets and stars, of course, there has to be life everywhere. But the idea of it starts to feel maybe a little weirder because we might not be able to communicate with it very well. It just might be too far gone, you know? I don't know. I don't know if I'm comforted by that or, you know, what it does to my, because I've always been a sort of blurry spirituality myself. You know, I'm kind of this. I figure like whatever would be out there kind of going to take care of us, you know, it's going to be sort of looking after us. And maybe some of them are, but I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. I'm just going to let it trail off like that. It's just my.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just, like overall, would you do you feel like if you had an opportunity to experience it again, you would want to?
Yeah.
So, yes. Yeah. Do you think it was do you think it's by and large a positive experience in your life having seen this or a negative?
I'm glad I saw it. You know, I wish that our culture, it's like a recovered memory. It's like, you know, like it's like one of those like, oh, I you know, I realized that something bad happened to me or something. Like it's like this weird dark secret. But I am glad because I do think it's informed my life later on and my growth and my understanding of the world and even the government and, you know, the news. And, you know, I feel I have come to believe and feel and experience in my life because I have had quite a few mystical experiences since then. And I have come to believe that, the world is a magical place and we're very lucky to be here. And I feel kind of privileged to have seen it now. You know, it feels like I, even though I lived in like the shadows with it, I have always felt kind of privileged to have seen it. You know, I really have. I feel like, the possibility that I was chosen to see it makes me happy. Mm-hmm. You know, that I could handle seeing it something. I don't know. You know, I just feel like it really happened. It so happened to me and it's a cool ass thing to have happened to a human being, you know? And I don't know directly how it impacted me. Again, I was like, you know, are they going to come and get me tonight and perform experiments on me? And I was definitely nervous about that at the beginning, but I think at the end of my life, when I do my life review, this would have been like a big piece of the puzzle for me. You know,
I like your perspective much better than mine. I think that sounds much, much, much healthier.
Yeah. And I wonder, because I had my experience, you know, as I'm entering my final innings
Jesus, Dave.
You know,
like, I didn't know.
What if I,
wow.
Yeah, you know,
wow.
Sorry to hear that.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, you
Dave,
know.
Come on, baby. I mean, we got you. Hang on.
We have known each other 37 years.
Yeah. No, at 60, you kind of have to acknowledge there's not, you don't have a whole, you don't have a whole raft of decades ahead of you at 60.
No. Do a lot of walking.
No.
I hear walking is good.
Yeah.
Walking.
Well, it's the vital part. That's what a friend said to me. It's like, yeah, I could live to 100, but how vital am I going to really be at 100?
Yeah. Know? Yeah. Well, I've been watching this documentary on Netflix about the blue zones. People,
blue zones. Yeah. Yeah.
And those people seem, they're pretty vital in their hundreds.
We have to move to Loma Linda or Sardinia.
Got the people on the hills, right? They just got to climb hills all the time.
Some of them. Yeah. So I think that's the Sardinia one. Yeah. They're their entire town is built on going up and down stairs and hills. And what's up, Mina? Betty White always said her secret to longevity was living in a house with stairs.
She said, good for me. I have lots of stairs.
Yeah. She said, don't live in a bungalow. That was her advice.
Yeah,
right.
Good advice. She lived a good healthy life. That is that's a great, incredible story. I haven't heard a sighting like that. And you were part of history.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but look at me.
I remember having a response to the communion book, for example, that was, I was like 15 or 16, maybe, or 14. I'm not sure when, and I never had an abduction experience, but there was something about it that, like, I wanted that experience. I, for some reason, I don't know why, because so much of it was terrifying, but I think it's just wanting just a little glimpse behind the curtain, just a little glimpse. And I think that is what you were given, and that's incredible.
Yeah, I definitely was. Yeah, pretty cool.
I think I've always lived life with the assumption that nothing truly interesting would ever happen. you know?
Boy, were you wrong.
Yeah. And I think we, you know, and we may be at the precipice of all of us having to deal with something very, very interesting in the next couple of years.
Do you think there's going to be disclosure and all that stuff? Do you think that's actually going to happen?
I think so. I mean, I think what's happened with the congressional hearing and with this guy, I don't know if you've been following, with Dave Grush, the whistleblower, talking about the reverse engineering programs and craft retrieval programs. And lately there's been a lot of reporting that there's something like between 30 and 40 other whistleblowers that have already given testimony to the intelligence community, inspector general, and that have already been deposed under oath. And so I think don't know how many of them are going to go public because there's a lot of fear involved. But this, I think you were definitely going to hear a lot coming forward. I mean, with the Chuck Schumer legislation about making everything unclassified automatically in the, like all UFO documents and information are supposed to be automatically unclassified. And then the military has to make an argument to classify them one by one.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. There's a big, big law that Schumer's trying to push through the Senate that may or may not get passed, because it seems like there's now pushback. But in that law, he was just like, so if you're holding a UFO, you got to give it to us.
If you've got bodies.
I mean, it's the craziest legislate. Like, the stuff in it is fucking crazy. And he wrote it all out. Like, if they've got some bodies, we don't give the bodies to us. You got to give them up if you're in a secret program. And it is.
Yeah, he mentions non-human intelligence 25 times, I think, in it.
This is Chuck Schumer's legislation.
Wow.
Intense.
So it's very, very much out there. And yet I go back and forth every day of whether or not disclosure will happen through the government, because I really do think there's still a pretty strong pushback of people that don't want it out for whatever reasons those are. And I think it'll actually, but I do think it's sort of happening. Like, I think it's happening. Yeah. It's just it's just happening through a million little holes in the dam, as opposed to just the government just saying, like, all right, because I don't think they have enough to say that would reassure anybody. I feel like they would have to come out and be like, okay, this is happening and this is what it is. I think that they might have to say, this is what's happening, and, you know, fuck if I know what's going on. But And, I think, that, you know, these conversations, you know, academia, you know, lots of money's going into scientific research that's super credible and legitimate. And I think that can kind of bubble up in those types of ways and people sharing their stories and just, you know, saying this is what happened to me. And I think it's just going to, it's, I believe people are believing and super curious and that it might happen that way. But Dave might be right. It might happen through legislation. I don't know, or whistleblowers, which is happening. That is going on.
The whistleblowers are happening. There's also people musing that this may all be happening because people in government, people like Chuck Schumer, have knowledge we don't have that something is coming that's forcing their hand anyway, and that they have to get ahead, and that they have to get ahead of it because it maybe it's the non-human intelligences have a timeline, they have a schedule, and maybe the it's been made clear to people on the inside that there's a deadline to get people ready.
Oh my God, it's so, you know, the whole world, like everything is so bendy right now, you know, like reality just feels very bendy right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if like we're on the verge of something, we just don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's made it very hard for me to stay glued to MSNBC following politics the way I used to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't watch the news, you know, it just makes me crazy, you know, because the world feels a little bendy right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the last few years, like, I feel like we're on the moon a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt like for a long time, I was like, when's the future going to start? Like, when's it going to get like cool future-y, right? Like, I was like, I know we got phones, but like, where's the cool, fun future? And then it feels like the last 2 years, it just was like, pow, like future is here. Like artificial intelligence, like, you know, there's, you know, UFO debris somewhere in some garage. There's, you know, here's some plagues to throw at you. Like, I was like, oh, okay. All right. Well, you know, easy
well,
future.
Like,
easy.
You know,
AI's having trouble with adolescence, you know?
Yeah, it's like my moment finally came where like the government was acknowledging UFOs and like nobody cared.
That's the amazing
thing.
Everybody
has so much fatigue that nobody cared.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like, finally, it's being taken seriously.
But it's also, it's also just that we've been, you know, the conditioning that made you not talk about it all those years is still there. And so there's still people who haven't sort of looked at the evidence and haven't engaged with what's really going on right now, or people who haven't had an experience of their own, are still mostly oblivious to what's going on.
That's a lot of things, unfortunately.
Yeah, the fact that and we've been so very, very cleverly conditioned to not pay attention to UFOs for so long I think for some people there is going to be a true ontological shock coming, and
for sure, at least all of us will be like, oh yeah, there it is.
Yeah,
I'm going to be a little ontologically shocked. I have to be honest. I will still, you know, I'll still be a little anxious about that moment, but I'm going to hope that I meet all the people that know all the secret like caves to hide in, or the little underground cities, or whatever we need to do. This is all my, that's my plan. You know, it's like Dave's hanging
Sounds
out
like
with
a good
people
plan.
That know what's going on. So, so the strike is over as a, yourself, a actor, writer, producer, Robin, do you have how you feeling? I mean, it's, you know.
I feel good. I'm glad. Mm-hmm. I have a project that's been waiting to, you know, to deal with, you know, and so I guess we can move ahead. I'm going to have a big Zoom about it tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, and I can put down one picket sign. So that's going to be easier.
Still got to
have the other picket sign. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, hopefully that'll be resolved soon as well. I'm hoping.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope so. Yeah. Hopefully the writer's agreement will function as a template for the SAG after agreement.
Yeah.
It seemed like stuff like foreign residuals and transparency and being rewarded for success and a lot of the stuff that was being super resisted before. I mean, the only thing you can like hope for is that some of the pain yielded some benefits for people. Like, I mean, it doesn't make up for a lot of the widespread, you know, pain, frankly, of just like crews and this and that. But it does seem like they got some important wins with artificial intelligence, and they're not going to be able to write first drafts of anyone's shows with a computer. And hopefully now, like, the actors will be able to deal with likeness AI stuff, which is also really fucking weird.
Can you believe we're talking about AI on a UFO show? I mean, it's a real, like, it's
super real.
It's super real.
Yeah. And they can, they can do it now, but in like a year or two, it's going to be, you won't be able to tell the difference. So, I mean, it is hopefully a moment where a template was laid down. And usually I complain about the writers being like, you know, 5 years behind the technology. They're fighting for like Betamax when like DVDs are taking off, you know, they're fighting for like, they just never seem to like hit the moment. I think now they did at least try to rein it in a little bit. They're going to, sounds like the studios are still going to be able to train AI on literary material. So that's weird that they want to do that. And that's problematic. You can just feed it scripts and it'll learn and keep learning. And then, you know, who knows what it'll churn out, but it can't be considered a writer. It can't be considered source material. It can't be, you can't compete with it for credit or whatever. And it seems like there's some other stuff that might serve as a template for actors.
It's a good first battle for maintaining humanity.
My God.
You know, because I think that's, if we had gotten to a point where we just, we let machines write our stories for us just because maybe they can, it really does seem like a first domino in the end of humanity. And which may be what we're looking at in the UFO experience anyway. Maybe our future AI, you know, the coming back, not our biological descendants, but our technological ones.
It's such a strange time to be alive, you know, just really is, and how fast things are moving. And it's just kind of incredible. I was listening to somebody was saying that because of like Google Maps and Waze and all these devices that help us know to get to where we're going, that it's really changing our brains, because how we being able to visually see a map of a city or something is a very integral part of how our brain is structured. And losing that changes our abilities in other areas.
Yeah, it can diminish a lot of cognitive abilities that we don't hold maps in our heads anymore. I was reading an article that said recommending that you should go out and try to drive somewhere without your GPS every once in a while. Try to walk somewhere.
Somebody's suing. This lady suing Google Maps, or because her husband like drove off a bridge or something because the map told him to go and he just obeyed the.
That sounds like me. It sounds like something I would do. Like I leave the house. Totally Christina, we're yelling at each other. I'm like, put the maps on. She's like, you're four fucking feet from your house. What are you talking about? It's like, I need to know. I need to know where I'm going.
You said that you have a terrible sense of direction. And so do I.
Yeah.
I literally, like, if I go to a restaurant and go to the bathroom, I have no idea how to get back to my seat. Like, I have no idea where my table is.
Is that a search party?
Yes. It's terrible.
If I walk somewhere with someone else, I will have no idea how we got there.
Me too.
No idea.
It's really bad. It's bad.
I have a pretty good sense of direction, but I have an anxiety response to not having the map thing on. It's so bizarre. It's like a trip I've taken multiple times. It's just, you know, road trips. It's hilarious.
That's why Chrissy, who is lurking there somewhere, will not have the cognitive decline, because she battles with every map.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She has her own routes in mind.
Almost every turn that the GPS suggests. No, that's not the best.
No.
Right. So a kind of classic taxi direction giver, right? Like, don't take Columbus, take Amsterdam, whatever. Yeah.
Chrissy has what the London cabbies call the knowledge.
Yes.
Well, that's good. We all need Chrissy as a navigator.
We all do. We need her as a life navigator.
Mm. Well, listen, this was fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Robin,
yeah, thank you, Robin.
Thank you. Thank you. This is great. It's fun to talk about. I don't get to talk about it.
No, yeah, it's a good thing to do, I think. I think that's part of why we're doing this is to, you know, show that it's okay.
Yeah, it's totally. And thank you for the trust. Honestly, thank you for
thank you so much.
So far in our kind of limited pool, it seems like it's a good thing. People feel better after kind of sharing it. And it just encourages others to sort of do the same. And it doesn't become something that we can, it's something we should talk about. It's an amazing thing that's going on. And we should all be able to kind of freely, figure it out together. It's a fucking crazy story.
Even if clearly B now thinks you're crazy.
I know. He's looking for a new home.
She's chilling. She's chilling. She's enjoying herself.
But they don't see the crazy crafts in the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was great. Thank you so much, Robin.
All right. Nice to see you guys.
It was great to see you too, and we appreciate it. And we'll see you soon.
All right. Take good care.
Thanks.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.